Welcome to the Mental Minute, an AI-generated podcast. Today, we're exploring a topic that genuinely touches everyone, how we truly learn. We've synthesized insights from numerous sources, cutting through the noise to bring you the most impactful ideas about education, not just in schools, but, you know, in every corner of your life. You might think you have a solid grasp on how learning works, but the material we've reviewed suggests we've been looking at it, well, the wrong way for a long time. It argues that while we've meticulously developed an art of teaching, what we call pedagogy, the equally crucial art of learning has surprisingly remained an academic orphan, kind of neglected.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Because that capacity to learn is inherent to every human being. I mean, most of what we learn throughout our lives happens implicitly, almost as a byproduct of just living. We often aren't even consciously aware that learning is taking place, which raises a really important question. If learning is so natural, why has it been so neglected in formal education? It's like having only half a conversation about how knowledge is acquired.
Exactly. So what does this fundamental disconnect mean for you? Whether you're navigating your career, a new hobby, or maybe you're just curious about improving your own abilities. We're going to explore how shifting our focus from teaching to learning can unlock, well, incredible potential, leading to what one compelling idea highlights as action knowledge instead of just school knowledge. Let's unpack this core distinction then. School knowledge versus action knowledge. Think about learning a new software tool, maybe. School knowledge is passively watching tutorials, perhaps taking a quiz,
right,
and then forgetting it next week because you didn't truly apply it.
Yeah, if we connect this to the bigger picture, school knowledge is often just presented to us. We grasp it partially for a specific test, maybe then it's quickly forgotten. It stays external, you know. Action knowledge, however, that's what you use for your own purposes. You incorporate it into your worldview. You apply it to cope with life's challenges. Imagine being suddenly faced with a real-world problem at work that requires that software tool. You struggle, you experiment, maybe you fail a bit, but then you master it because you needed to. That's the difference. One is forgotten, the other becomes a permanent integrated part of your skill set. This shift from passively receiving to actively using knowledge is crucial. It truly becomes yours.
And when we lean into this active engagement, something quite powerful happens. A virtuous circle gets established. Genuine active involvement leads to improved insight into how you learn, which boosts self-esteem, and that in turn increases your involvement even further.
Exactly.
It's about empowering you to take charge of your own learning journey, recognizing your agency in the process. But I can imagine some listeners thinking, isn't genuine active involvement sometimes really hard? What if I lack initial motivation or get stuck? How do these sources address those kinds of roadblocks?
That's a really good point. The core belief here, I think, is that the ultimate purpose of education isn't just about mastering a subject. It's actually about developing the whole person, their personality, their ability to cope with all kinds of contingencies in life. So when learners become aware of how they think and learn, it naturally boosts their self-esteem and helps them become more socially responsible. The roadblocks often start to melt away as that self-efficacy grows.
Okay.
It's about building a robust individual, not just, you know, a fact-retaining one.
That's a powerful why for prioritizing learning. But let's get practical. What are the concrete steps our sources suggest for making this shift happen? Especially for someone listening who wants to apply it. Where does a learner even begin to build that autonomy, that independence? It seems to start with a fundamental principle from a researcher named Vygotsky. Successful learning entails autonomy or independent problem solving.
Right.
But this autonomy has to grow out of dependence, meaning under adult guidance or in collaboration with more capable peers. It's not about throwing you in the deep end right away. It's more gradual.
Exactly. It means the process isn't about abandoning guidance entirely. It's more about the teacher having an explicitly pedagogical role in, well, in letting go of control at the right moments. And this act of letting go, it has to be made explicit so learners can actually reflect on their own progress and understand when they're taking the reins. It's a deliberate handover, you know, not just stepping back randomly.
Okay, that makes sense. One effective way these ideas are structured is through a three-phase lesson plan. First, there are teacher-initiated activities. The teacher introduces a concept or activity, maybe like that picture plus text method, where the class collectively builds a story from an image. And then learners create their own individual stories in diaries from other photos. This phase also clarifies expectations, like curriculum guidelines, make sure everyone's on the same page, basically. Then we move into learner-initiated activities. And this is where it gets really interesting, I think. The teacher shifts from controller to participant. they become a listener, a discussant, a facilitator, mapping out progress, sometimes an expert stepping in when needed. Learners make their own decisions within set conditions. Our sources give some fascinating examples. Groups planning a talk show, making small books, creating cartoons, writing plays.
Things they actually want to do.
Right. They also plan their own homework and evaluate their work. I imagine students deciding what English books they want to read and reading far more than any teacher would demand just because they chose it.
That intrinsic motivation kicks in.
Exactly. And finally, the together plenary session. This brings the whole class together with the teacher to present and evaluate the results of group or individual work. It's a space for joint evaluation of the lesson, where the learning environment can be adjusted based on collective reflection. What worked, what didn't, what's next. It fosters that sense of shared responsibility.
And to manage this kind of dynamic environment, to stop it becoming, well, chaos.
Yeah, how do you manage that?
Two simple but really powerful tools stand out: posters and diaries. Posters can visually track projects, shared information, agreements, good ideas, requests, evaluations. They provide a visible shared roadmap for the class. Keeps everyone on the same page.
Okay, posters, right. And diaries. Learners use them to write plans, reflections, self-evaluations. For example, a student might rate their lesson on a scale of 1 to 10, or write a pretty extensive letter about their learning process.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers can also set musts for diaries, like remembering to frame new words or numbering pages, just little structures. This consistent reflection helps learners systematically consider what happened, what they learned, and how they learned it. And teachers keep their own diaries, too, tracking lessons and student progress.
Yeah.
That's a big part of the shift.
Yeah, that teacher reflection is key. Another critical aspect that comes up repeatedly is group work. Now, while emphasizing its importance, the sources also caution that there can definitely be bad group work if it's ill-prepared or unfocused.
Oh, yeah, we've all been there, right? That team meeting where one person dominates, or the group project where one person does everything.
Exactly. But when done right, good group work promotes learning by engaging individuals in dialogue, fostering reflection, helping them compensate for maybe underdeveloped capacities, especially in something like language learning. Collaborative writing, for instance, often yields texts far superior to what one individual could produce on their own. It's about that synergy.
Synergy. Speaking of group work, our sources indicate that successful learning in an interdependent classroom involves negotiating pretty much everything, from the overall aims to specific solutions and responsibilities. Imagine a class where everyone writes their learning goals. Then they combine them into a collective mission statement.
Wow, okay.
Then they brainstorm solutions, deciding who does what and when. This shared ownership fosters a really deep sense of commitment, ensures everyone's invested.
That naturally leads us to wonder, though, what about mistakes? Because mistakes will happen.
Of course.
In this learner-focused environment, correcting a mistake isn't just about fixing it. The key is helping the learner transfer that correction to their overall understanding. Activities should encourage learners to ask why they made the mistake, prompting that deeper level of self-awareness.
So it's not just that's wrong, it's why was it wrong?
Precisely. And peer correction also helps students become less dependent on the teacher. It fosters self-sufficiency and active participation. It truly transforms errors from, you know, perceived failures into powerful learning opportunities.
This whole approach, then, it isn't just about the subject matter you're learning, is it? It's profoundly about you becoming more aware of how you learn. The research calls this developing metacognitive knowledge. Knowledge about yourself as a cognitive creature, about the learning tasks you face, and the strategies you effectively use. It's basically knowing about knowing.
Right. And metacognitive knowledge can be sort of broken down into three categories. Person, so your beliefs about yourself as a learner. Task, the nature of the information you're processing. And strategy, how you actually approach learning. But just asking learners about their processes isn't quite enough. Mm-hmm. They need to know what to be aware of and how to become aware, because often this knowledge is implicit. It's hidden. Think of second-order beliefs like the hidden operating system beneath your main beliefs. It's not just what you think, but why you think it, and how those underlying beliefs might be silently limiting or maybe empowering you.
That's fascinating. One technique highlighted is the self-task, where learners explore their perceived self versus their ideal self in relation to learning. This, along with group discussions, helps uncover those second-order beliefs. For example, one student initially believed she couldn't speak English, but then was very surprised when she actually did it in a supportive setting. leading to increased self-confidence. It's a powerful, almost transformative shift in self-perception that just unlocks potential.
And the results of these approaches, they show profound benefits. Students reported increased motivation, self-confidence, a significant realization that learning isn't limited to classrooms or textbooks. Many noted they would continue to learn differently, no longer neurotically monitoring their speech, as one put it, but daring to speak more freely. They found learning liberating and voluntary, rooted in their own interests, rather than some rigid, imposed task. Imagine that.
Wow, liberating and voluntary. That sounds ideal. This shift also profoundly impacts the role of the teacher then. Instead of being the sole transmission teacher, just pouring knowledge in,
right,
they become an interpretation teacher or consultant, supporting learning as an autonomous process through genuine dialogue. It's about creating situations where your thinking is used and recognized, which naturally builds self-esteem. Less instructing, more enabling.
Exactly. And this requires teachers to develop really strong interpersonal skills, practicing constructive dialogue, because learning is inherently a social process. And it's the differences between people and their acceptance of those differences that truly create progress and development. Recognizing that diversity in thinking and approaches leads to much richer outcomes for everyone involved.
So wrapping this up, what does this all mean for you, the listener? It means that learning is not a passive activity. It's active, deeply personal, and often a collaborative journey. By understanding how you learn, by reflecting on your process, and by leaning into environments that foster autonomy and interdependence, you can transform that school knowledge into powerful action knowledge. It's about owning your education, really, in every sense of the word.
Yeah, the ultimate takeaway is that true self-direction in learning isn't about isolation. It's actually about leveraging social interaction and self-awareness to constantly build on your capabilities. Think about how you can consciously apply these ideas, asking why you made a mistake, setting your own learning goals, seeking out collaborative opportunities, not just in formal settings, but in any area where you want to grow, whether it's mastering a new skill for work, leading a project, or just understanding a complex topic better. It's applicable everywhere.
That's all for this episode. Thanks for tuning in.